First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the show, another extended, lavish edition of the playoff podcast. We're about to do round two. We have Cousin Sal on the phone right now. We have Aaron Schatz from Football Outsiders and a couple other mystery guests. But let's get to Cousin Sal, who actually had a big week last week. Sal, you there?
If I had a nickel for every lavish podcast I've done this week, I'd have money for the teaser for the playoff games. What's going on, though?
You're on strike. You're doing a podcast. You're doing a roast on the Damashek show this week.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
You're staying busy.
Me and Jeffrey Ross, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to link to that in my column this week. You're going head-to-head with the king of the roast masters, Jeffrey Ross. And I have to be honest, I have you as a -180 favorite.
Really? Wow.
Well, you know his whole act, and he's only capable of doing his act, and I think you're going to be able to jump on his jokes and stuff, and that will discombobulate him.
All right. I hope so.
Discombobulate him a little like the Giants pass rush discombobulated Jeff Garcia last week.
Yeah, I guess so. People have set the Giants as a favorite to win the Super Bowl all of a sudden.
I know. Now, you know, I actually have this in my playoff manifesto. Sometimes a team can look a little too good in round one, and people get a little too excited about them and maybe overrate them and think they're better than they are. And then round two rolls around, and they go back to earth. Do you see that happening with the Giants?
Yeah, I do. And not only that, I didn't think they looked that good. Could it be like this once you neutralize Galloway, that Tampa Bay offense really didn't have anything?
And that's
how it seemed to me. And if you look at the numbers, Manning had 185 yards passing and Burris had 38 yards receiving, so... I don't know. It didn't jump out at me too much, really.
They did run the ball. It's possible that neither team is that good and that Tampa was just worse. But I was surprised by a couple of things. I was surprised that Tampa didn't blitz Manning really as much. I just thought they would just send everybody after him and do that whole thing. I don't really think they did that. And then I was surprised that they never did shotgun with Garcia. Not to get too technical, but... Isn't that what to do? Like, why wouldn't they have emulated what Brady did with the Patriots the week before?
Yeah, I don't know.
Isn't that the game plan?
You would think Tampa Bay settled into this game. I think Gruden figured out he'd be playing the Giants in, like, week 12.
Right.
You'd think he'd have, like, 7 weeks of footage to watch. Yeah, you do pressure Manning, who's a scatterbrained quarterback at times.
Yeah,
you're right. Garcia should drop back in the shotgun to avoid the Giants' rush.
I would just think you watch that Week 17 game with the Pats and see what they did and how they scored in the second half and just imitate it.
Yeah.
And instead they went the other direction. They went with like this weird ball control Ernest Graham thing. Anyway, I talked to you on Sunday night. I'm going to use the word petrified. You were petrified of the Giants, and now... You know, you're a good fan, you're a Cowboys fan, you've now talked yourself into the fact that maybe the Giants aren't the underdog team this week that's going to cover, that it's actually going to be somebody else. Make your case.
Well, you know how it is, Bill. We listen all week, and it's now Wednesday, and I haven't heard one person tell me that they think the Cowboys are going to cover the spread, let alone, you know, and half of those people think they're not going to win the game. So it's like, wait a minute, what are we talking about here? This is, and so how hard it is to beat a team three times, but... You know, we scored 76 points against them in 2 weeks, and the Giants had won six in a row. They were hotter than they are now when we beat them the second time. And I don't know, 12 Pro Bowlers and Tony Romo, I just don't think is going to be a perennial loser every year. I think we win and win handily.
I like the Giants on Sunday, and now I'm leaning toward the Cowboys. But I think it's more because the Giants fans are so annoying.
Ugh.
I mean, really, I picked Tampa last week and probably got 600 emails from Giants fans making fun of the pick, ignoring the fact that I went 2-0-1 with my other picks.
Right.
And playing this whole thing that, because Eli is 7-1, now 8-1 on the road after last week, playing this whole card that the Giants are great on the road. They're great on the road because they didn't play anybody.
That's right.
They played all crap teams on the road, and if you look at his stats, he really only had two good games. I mean, did he win the Buffalo game? I don't think so. Did he win the London game? I don't think so. You go down the line, and he probably had two good games out of eight.
Right, and he's probably somewhere in the middle. Like, the Giants fans want to hang him after some of these games. And it's like, all right, give him a little break, you know. And but he's not the second coming of Joe Montana either after last week. So
right. Well, they do make an interesting case that maybe the way he is mentally, maybe he's better off playing in the road because he doesn't have the pressure of the Giants fans turning on him. That's interesting.
I could see that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Are you worried at all about the Romo Simpson photos?
I don't think so. You know, we didn't even know who we were playing at that point. So what's you can only watch so much tape and spend so much time in the media room and rather being in Mexico with Daisy Duke. I think that's that was a smart move on his part.
Yeah, I think you gotta go away, relax, recharge the batteries, have some dumb conversations with a dumb person. You're ready to roll.
All right. About Jason Witten?
Did he get to go?
He went with his wife. Yeah, he's the other guy in those pictures.
Because Romo, well, that was always a weird thing for me, is that Romo and Witten room together on the road. They don't have their own rooms.
That's right.
It's a little strange.
Yep.
I mean, I like you, but I would much rather have my own room than to room with you on the road.
But you know what? We do room on the road, and it works out, right?
It did. It did the last time. Let's go to the other end. Actually, no. Let's switch to let's go to the Colts-Chargers game.
Just so we know, I thought this line would be 9. You thought it would be 7.5.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, we can't go through the charade anymore where we predict the lines because we do this on Sunday night. There's no way either of us aren't going to see the line. So go ahead.
No, so I guess 9. I thought it would be higher than it is. And you hit it right on the head, 7.5, and it is 7.5. So.
Yeah, I said 7.5 because, well, for a couple reasons, but mainly because I normally would have said 8 or 8.5, but I thought T.O. was worth a point. And then I also think the Giants fans knocked down the line because Vegas factors that in. So really, I think this is a 9-point line that is about a point and a half lower than it should be.
Yep.
Is it still 7.5 or no?
Still 7.5 right now.
Okay. All right, let's go to Colts Chargers because that's probably the easiest game on the board out of all these games. What did you say for this one?
I thought it was 8.5. You said 7.5, and it's 8. And I think
so we split.
Right now, yeah. So we split that one.
But has it gone up because of the Gates injury or no?
No, it stayed at 8, so it's interesting. I think the Colts are in a good spot here, right? They're not going to take the Chargers lightly because they lost to them, but look how they lost them. They managed to throw 6 interceptions, and Vinatieri missed the field goal, and the Chargers barely win. It's not going to happen again.
This game, it feels like stealing to me.
Yeah.
I don't want to give away my picks because that would ruin Friday's column, but I don't see how you'd take the Chargers in this game. I can't even imagine making a case for them.
Well, we all know that you and your beloved Coach Belichick are not above stealing, so go ahead, just steal. Steal again.
Maybe I should. That hurts. That really hurts. That you're still piling on 4 months later.
Team makes
a mistake. So we both agree that you'd be very hard-pressed to make a case for Phil Rivers and North Turner in this game.
I think it's like 27-10, especially when you see how Tomlinson takes games off. And North Turner, how does he not throw screens to Tomlinson in the first half? That was like Rivers was getting rattled and Tomlinson couldn't get out of the gate. And so throw some screens there and there, mix it up. But I guess he finally did catch on.
It's become personal with me and the Chargers because I was on pace for a very nice weekend. I won't expand on the details, but just a very nice weekend. We'll leave it at that. And then after watching that first half, I panicked and made some arrangements for that weekend to be cushioned if it didn't turn out to be a very nice weekend. And then it turned out that it was a very nice weekend, only my arrangements had made it not so nice. Did that make sense?
You're talking about cheating on the wife, right?
No. I'm talking about if gambling were legal, I would have done.
I hear you.
Yeah, but damn them for not showing up in the first half, really.
Yeah,
I mean, come on.
That was bad news.
I have to admit, I got scared when they showed the split screen of Jeff Fisher and North Turner, or maybe the back-to-back shots or whatever. I was a little concerned. All right, let's go to Pats Jags.
All right.
What did I say, 11?
We both said 14.
Oh, yeah, 14.
We both said 14, and it opened at 11, and it's at 11.5. And I think you felt the way I did. Like, you can't even consider Jacksonville unless – you throw 14 on the board, right? That should be the opening line.
Isn't I thought it was up to 13. It's not?
Oh, I'm sorry. It is up to 13. You're right.
Right. Yeah, it'll end up at 14. I don't know why. Vegas has been a little off. I mean, they cost themselves a lot of money with the Pittsburgh-Jacksonville game.
I don't think they could figure the Patriots. They either get murdered or they make a killing on these Patriots games lately, right?
Mm. I do, you know, if you're going to make the case for the Jags, I'm going to make a case a little bit different than what people have said. I do think the Pats crowds have kind of been lousy at home.
Well,
I'm saying that with a hushed voice because it's like, you know, it's almost the Pats fans get mad, but I don't know how much of a home field advantage we've had.
Yeah.
It's not like the old days, I can tell you that much.
I don't even think it matters where the Pats play anymore.
Probably
you're
not.
Right. I mean, but the Jags, they didn't impress me with the way they let the Steelers back in that game. I kind of think this defense is a little overrated.
Well, know? And then the John Henderson injury is not helping.
That doesn't help. But one thing's for sure, if the Pats don't go 19-0 this season, I mean, you might as well be the Rams of this season.
I know.
How sick are you of hearing that?
No, well, it's a valid point. It ruins the season. It really does. And then every time somebody talks about, you know, who, if somebody has a chance to go undefeated, they're like, well, the Pats went 16-0, but remember, they lost the Super Bowl or they lost the AFC title game. So it would just ruin it. It would be terrible.
But they keep upping the ante. Of course, Super Bowl is the goal. But if Teddy Bruschi doesn't tear Peyton Manning's right ACL, then this season is not even the left. If the left ACL, forget it. Kraft should sell the team. But if Brady doesn't impregnate Jessica Simpson during halftime of the Super Bowl, this season is for naught. This is nothing.
Well,
might as well be on 2-14.
I am a little surprised that people aren't more convinced that the Pats are going to win. It seems people are more interested in making cases for teams that could beat them other than just saying, hey, this team just went 60-0 and killed basically everybody.
Yeah.
They're probably going to win the Super Bowl. I mean,
31-7 this week, I think, somewhere around there.
All right, last game. Packers-Seahawks, which we vehemently disagree on as a matchup. But I said, what did I say, Packers by 8?
Well, we both said 8.5, and it's 8. And
okay.
I think it's remained at 8.
So I won for this week. I've beaten you now two playoff weeks in a row.
You beat me 2 playoff weeks in a row.
So
but this is, we really do disagree on this one because, so you're gonna say the Packers. I don't know if you want to give it away before your column. But
well, I'm leaning toward the Packers. I might, you know, it's Wednesday. We're taping this Wednesday morning, and I do the column late Thursday night. Right now I'm leaning toward the Packers. There's no question.
I just don't see all four, and of course it could be my team, the Cowboys, going down, but I don't see all four favorites advancing, and that would be Seahawks play like tough defense like the Bears did, and the Bears beat the Packers twice. I may be reaching a little, but they got the playoff experience and momentum, and I like the Seahawks with the points.
Well, what do you think about the fact that everybody in the country will have the Colts and the Seahawks in a tease this week?
The Colts and the Seahawks?
Yeah, I mean the Colts and the Packers. I'm sorry.
So both two
-8.
Yeah,
bring them down
to
under a field goal and just hope they both win by 3 or more.
I could see that. You know,
seems like one of the most obvious bets that's been out there.
Vegas, you know, sneaking some mononucleosis into Brett Favre's painkillers, and then all of a sudden you don't cover a 2-team teaser.
Were you that impressed with Seattle last week? Because I was not.
I wasn't. I'm just basing it on their defense. I know Hasselbeck looked erratic and Alexander, and they're both underachieving. But the defense is tough, and they talk about not having a home field advantage anymore. I mean, Lambeau is nothing with these guys. I mean, Greg Jennings at home, who Ryan Grant, who has benefited off this home field advantage over the years? This is a young team, and they've made the playoffs. This is the first time for a lot of these guys.
Well, I remember the first bet you and I ever got killed on together, I think, was I'm going to say January 2003. Yeah, January 2003 when Michael Vick went into Lambeau and just worked them by himself. And going into that game, everybody was, Lambeau, Brett Favre, Michael Vick on the road, come on. And it was like a butt-whipping.
But a Saturday night game, and we needed that game to close out many many wages. Back then it was legal.
So, was too bad how that worked out. But, you know, I don't trust Matt Hasselbeck, and I certainly don't trust Sean Alexander. And I keep going back to those two things. I didn't think Hasselbeck looked good even remotely last weekend, except for a little bit in the fourth quarter. But I just thought he was really erratic, and Alexander looks terrible.
You might be right. I was thinking more of a payback thing, too. Well, what was it, 2 or 3 years ago that the Packers beat him in overtime at home?
Right.
Which you had the Seahawks, I believe, right?
Well, I did, but I think this I think this Packers team is better than people realize just because of that Ryan Grant.
Mm.
I really think he's, you know, just the way we conceive of good running backs now has been totally turned around. Like, that Bradshaw in the Giants is a good running back. I don't know where he came from. I don't even know what his first name is. But that guy killed the Seahawks. Killed the Bucks last week.
Seventh-round pick this year, and he went crazy. Right?
Yeah, and this Ryan Grant I really thought was good for the Packers. And it's almost like you don't need a name running back anymore. Hey,
keep this in mind, though, real quick. And I said this to you yesterday. The Seahawks now play for Sean Taylor. That transfer's over.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
All that momentum goes over to Seattle.
I forgot that. That, yeah, it gets passed like a legacy key almost.
Exactly. 21. Look to the heavens.
Yeah, I was going to put this in a column, but I'll say it now. I wish my friends liked me as much as the Redskins like Sean Taylor. I was thinking about that. Like, I actually felt guilty about my own life watching those games and seeing, like, they still talk to him. Clint Portis still has him in his cell phone. He accidentally calls him. I feel like if I passed away, after 3 weeks, I'm just forgotten. Everybody just says, yeah, I know.
I think you could make that happen. I mean, you need better street cred like the late, great Sean Taylor had. It can't all be about Pilates and sushi.
Yeah. You know? I don't eat sushi. I really resent that comment. I have no comment on the Pilates part of that.
Pilates you're not going to defend.
I'm not going to defend Pilates. Let's call the mysterious Brad.
Oh, yeah.
Who is coming off a shaky round one. Almost as shaky as Ben Roethlisberger. But we'll see what he has in store for us for round two. He's a diehard Giants fan and an Eli Manning supporter. We'll see where his head is at.
Brad gets to see each play 3 seconds before everyone else because, you know, the snap will start off and everyone's watching the screen. Then he'll all of a sudden the screen will shrink to everybody else because he moves directly in front of it and jumps up and down in either dismay or pleasure.
Yeah, it is one of his trademarks. Joe, our producer, can we call him? Let's see if he answers this.
Hello? Who's this?
Brad.
Yes.
How you feeling?
I feel well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm here with your friend Sal.
Oh, good times, good times. Where you guys at?
We were trying to
decide this week.
What's
going on?
We were trying to decide who had a shakier round one, you or Ben Roethlisberger.
Me?
I didn't bring it up.
Listen, I would just first of all like to thank the writers for putting an end to these award shows because it seems like a wave is starting where every two or three days this movie Juno was going to win best comedy and then these five repulsive people were going to go on TV, thank everybody and go tell everybody to go see their little movie and it made me sick and I'm glad it's over.
So you did not like Juno?
Best comedy? I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm from the old school, but when it says best comedy, I'm used to laughing more than once. Right? I mean, I don't know. I know she was 12 and pregnant, and that's cute. But I never laughed.
Well, you just gave away the whole movie to hundreds of people who might want to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like the crowd is going to see that thing.
Brad, walk us through your emotions after a decisive Giants
win. Hold on,
not all of them.
Just most of them.
Most of the emotions.
The game.
It was an interesting day. The day started with Huey Lewis and me in the kitchen and him looking at me and asking me if I had a microwave and he had something for me. That's how it started.
Huey Lewis
a little
came
odd.
To his house for football, to watch football.
Yeah,
there was nobody else in the room. We had never met and I had no idea what he had for me and why I would need to go in the microwave. But I played along and it was a tamale.
Okay.
Okay.
That's
so then,
good.
Yeah, that was a good start. I feigned interest in the tamale. I actually tried to eat some of it. It was awful.
It was awful.
Seven nothing was ugly. Three and out was ugly. And then it was just the Eli Manning we all come to know and love. You know, three straight years in the playoffs and clutch.
185 yards, one touchdown.
Huge. Every one of them big yards, too.
Throwing frozen ropes.
I do worry about that, like that middle screen the Giants had going. A lot of stuff was over the middle, and they'll eat the Cowboys up with that if that happens.
Mm.
But that was Eli wasn't the problem in the first two games, right? You gave up a ton of points against the Cowboys.
Yeah, he didn't do so well against the you're talking about the first two games against the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he played, he threw the ball pretty well. I don't know. He's really good on the road. I mean, he chokes in New York. This is 7 road wins for that team.
8.
Yeah.
It's
they beat Austin P twice. They beat, who else did they beat?
Yeah, you beat some crappy teams in that 8. You got to factor that in though, Brad.
That's cute. I believe, you play a team 3 times. The third time, and there is a chance they could win. I don't believe they will, but you play the team 3 times. You're good on the road. You know, Jacobs is a big guy. I think there's a chance. What's the number?
7.5.
Oof. It seems like they would win by more than that.
Wow. All right. Good. Good. You're pinning your hopes on Jacobs being a big guy. I think we are going to win by more than that.
Well, what do you mean? He is big. I win.
Big guys all over the place.
Hey, Brad. Brad, how do you feel about our friend Damashek calling Ben Roethlisberger 7 and continuing to do so after his terrible performance in round 1?
I think you become numb to it after, you know the guy 8 years or whatever, you know him. You get used to the nonsense in this little world he lives in. And now he has, now that he's sharing it with other people, God knows how that happened, on the radio.
Yeah.
He's coming under a little more scrutiny from people who haven't been numb to his ridiculousness.
Well,
if you're fresh to it, it's complete nonsense.
Well, I think you should start calling Eli Manning 10. What do you think of that?
Nah, I don't know. It doesn't seem. I'm used to your nonsense as well.
Yeah.
But it's just not along the same lines. I'm just used to you making up things. He has a different way of looking at things that are true. You know what I mean?
Let me tell you something. This is
fiction.
I don't know if Brad wants me to bring this up, but
probably not.
he was commenting how you think you know everything, but you don't, and how you guys are exactly opposite because people don't think he knows anything, and he knows everything.
Yeah, here's the approach you took, which was the smarter approach as I approach 35 years old.
Yeah.
Look like you know some stuff.
Right.
Talk. Well, you actually talk a lot for a guy. But look like you know some stuff. Maybe go to college, and then not really do things that get you arrested. And people think you know more than you do.
Right.
You run out there, you get arrested. Maybe you fall down. Maybe you get arrested 4 more times. People assume you don't know anything.
And that's when you become sneaky.
Right. That was the wrong approach. I mean, I don't know if I got another 35 years in me to reverse it.
No. Right. No way.
Well, probably how do you explain our friend Jimmy then? Because he acts like a know-it-all and he's been successful.
Well, he's a very smart man. I don't
know
if you should.
It's
a bad idea if you'd be comparing yourself to that gentleman. You know what I mean?
Last question. You said Huey Lewis was there.
Yes.
Were any of the members of Asia at Jimmy's house? And was anybody from Mr.
Jackson
Mister
Brown
there?
Showed up at halftime of the Charger game. That was a little surprising, but
interesting.
No,
it was another great day. It was a fantastic weekend. I don't know if that had how much you not being there was a part of it or if it was a coincidence, but I had a great weekend. A lot of good friends, a lot of good stuff.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
And I appreciate you giving me a call here. And I got to go. I got to go back to work.
All right, Brad.
All right.
Good luck with the Giants.
You take good care.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
What a character.
The 2007 character of the year. In rare form. Our friend Brad. All right, Sal.
All right, Bill.
So you're going to give us your picks one more time.
I'm going Seattle and then all 3 favorites other than that.
Okay.
Well, let me just say this real quick. I know we don't have time. I probably should have saved this, but I may have screwed up. I booked a plane ticket in a hotel for the NFC Championship game.
Oh, no.
I had to do it because we're not zillionaires, If you wait a week, till Sunday, it's a $700 round trip, and I got it for $225 this week. So I know I jinxed it. So,
well, why don't you tell the story about what happened the last time you did that?
Last time I did that, the Mets should have handled the Cardinals easily, and they did not. I thought we were going to play Detroit, and I had to eat 3 game tickets and plane tickets as well.
Mm. You know, that story was so depressing that your dog started barking in the background. That's how, like, that's no, how traumatic that was.
Don't do it. It'll be bad for me.
Well, I think you've jinxed the Cowboys, but let's hope you didn't. Sal, as always, a pleasure.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Talk to you later.
See you this weekend.
All right, Aaron Schatz, footballoutsiders.com. Aaron, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
How did you do in round one? I forget.
Blew it on the Giants, didn't I?
You blew it on, that's right. That's right. But
what
did
I say? That was the least likely upset of the four? Whoops.
Yep. Well, you did mention that the Giants' defensive line matched up really well with the Tampa offensive line. I remember that point.
Yes. Great defensive line, and the Tampa offensive line is really young. You know, part of it, though, was, you know, Garcia being mobile was supposed to be able to get away from the pass rush. That didn't really work that way.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'm fine with the word mobile, but I know it doesn't apply to Jeff Garcia anymore after watching that game.
It did against some other defensive lines earlier in the year. I saw him with some pretty sweet scrambles in other games, but not this time.
Did you like their game plan? Because I did not.
The Tampa game plan?
Yes.
Kind of went away from the run, didn't they?
I felt like, why not just emulate the Pats? Why not just put them in the shotgun and throw and do little quick outs?
What's interesting is that Tampa never used the shotgun before this year. They had not had a single snap in shotgun the last 3 years.
Oh, well, maybe that's why they didn't use it.
It's something the West Coast offense guys, the Bill Walsh acolyte guys, don't like the shotgun. Seattle this year was the shotgun less than any other team.
Mm-hmm.
But Gruden decided in the offseason that he was going to use it some, because the fact is the shotgun does, you know, it's more successful than being under center. There's a whole article about it in the Tampa Bay chapter of Pro Football Prospectus 2007. But what's weird is Tampa was one of the few teams that was actually worse from shotgun than under center this year.
Maybe that explains it. Even though they made this whole
big deal about adding shotgun because it was going to improve things, and Garcia felt comfortable in it, and they used it about NFL average, they were actually worse in shotgun than they were under center.
You know, I wish I had delved into this Giants game more, because the offensive line defensive thing, that was interesting. The fact that they stink in the shotgun, that played in. The fact that the Giants were actually better on the road than they were at home, which I didn't fully realize when I was making my picks.
Yeah, I think the Tampa Bay game plan did not include Eli Manning being, you know, good.
Right. Although they didn't blitz him, though.
No, and I, you know, I actually wrote on our site, if you were unhappy about the Patriots not blitzing Eli, you know, Bill Simmons is going to be really unhappy now, because the fact is no team in the NFL blitzes less than Tampa. Well, that's not true. Indianapolis, which, you know, they run the same defense, and those are the two teams that blitz less than any other team in the league. They want to pass rush straight from that front four.
Right.
And the Giants' offensive line, even with Rugemeyer at center instead of O'Hara, was able to stop those front four guys. And so Eli had all day, and he took what they gave him, and he didn't force the ball deep to Plaxico, and he's had two really good games.
Again, this is all information I wish I had really thought through last Wednesday.
Well, we're stuck with this whole problem now with the Giants, because, like, it's like, how long is momentum? I mean, you know, most of our studies have shown that two games is not really enough to show you that the previous eight or nine games are no longer valid.
Right.
And the Giants were sliding in the second half of the year, like they do every year, until halftime of the Buffalo game in Week 16, when the defense suddenly started playing really well, and then Eli started playing really well against the Patriots. But they still were really bad the rest of November and December, so you're asking yourself, I mean, you know, how is this turnaround really going to stick? And then at the same time, Dallas was terrible in their last four games compared to how good they were in the first 12.
You just made my head hurt. My head hurts.
Okay.
I'll try it like this.
Giants bad until last 2 weeks, so are they good or bad?
Good until
last 4 weeks, so are they good or bad?
I understood all your points. I'm just saying that I think this game is now impossible to pick from what you just laid
out. No, I agree. I can't believe I'm saying this, because Giants fans, you know, have kind of been upset at me all year for being negative. I mean, in our preseason predictions, I picked the Giants to get the first pick in the draft. Because I said if this team starts 1-4 or 0-5, they're just going to go full co-tight on Coughlin, and it's going to be terrible. But that's not the way things worked. And now I'm starting to think that depending on the health of Romo's thumb and T.O.'s ankle, they could actually upset Dallas. It seems so ridiculous, but I just can't get out of my mind the way Dallas played against Washington with all their starters, or at least most of them, in the last game of the season. It was awful.
Well, you just mentioned that the Giants fans were after you. They came after me last week after I picked Tampa. And you know what I might do? I might pick Dallas just to ruin the Giants season. Or no, I should actually pick the Giants because my picks have been so bad.
You got that negative vibe thing going?
Yeah, I basically put the stink on them, and then Dallas will cover, and then the Giants fans can continue to blame me because I ruined their season. But the fact is they should have kept their mouth shut.
Well, don't blame me if you get an angry phone call from Archie.
Yeah. Well, wait, let me ask you this while we're on the subject of the Giants. What would be the most satisfying Super Bowl win you could have for the Patriots as a fan? Giants, Cowboys, or Packers?
Cowboys, because they were the best team in the NFC for the year as a whole.
But what about the chance to beat Peyton Manning and then Eli Manning?
I feel like we already beat Eli Manning.
Right.
I mean, it would be a shock. I mean, if the Giants made it to the Super Bowl, the line, I think, would be a lot larger than it would be if it was the Packers or the Cowboys, because as much as they, you know, let all their emotions out in that last regular season game, they're not as good a team overall when healthy as those
right.
other two. The storyline all the media wants is Favre.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the greatest storyline of the year, the idea of Favre in his possible last game, although now it looks like he'll come back yet again, against, you know, trying to destroy the perfect season against the Patriots. That's the storyline that a lot of people want.
It's going to be amazing if that's the game.
Yeah.
And I really think that the amount of the Packer fans, it's going to be a home game for them. And it probably is going to be a home game for Dallas, too, in the Super Bowl. Either of those teams, if they make it. And probably the Giants. So anyway,
I wouldn't
look
be
at
surprised.
It.
Patriots fans travel really well now. It's a very different time now from, like, 96.
They did it in Jacksonville, though.
Yeah, but who travels well to Jacksonville? You have to go to Jacksonville.
I do think that once other people got down to Jacksonville, it was basically like, no, don't come. And that staved everyone off. Hey, do you have any interesting numbers that might swing me on this Giants-Cowboys game?
No, I mean, you know, an interesting thing that I was going through looking for stuff is that the Giants are the second worst defense in our ratings against tight ends. And Witten just destroyed them first game of the season.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the second game, he only had 12 yards on two catches. Because they ended up using him a lot to block because they were having major problems with the Giants' pass rush. Because remember, the first game of the season, Strahan's not playing yet. So once the Giants' pass rush had really developed by that game in week 10, they couldn't send Witten out on as many pass patterns to take advantage of the fact that the Giants' safeties aren't that good. They had to leave him back to block. So if they can send him out on pass patterns, he could do really well. But if they have to leave him back to block, then the offense is in a little bit of trouble.
I like that one. Now you've made me think. That's a good one. That was like how I ignored your thing about the defensive offensive line last week. Now I'm going to be thinking about this Jason Witten thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, Witten is, he's always an important player in the Cowboys games because of all of the great receiving tight ends. He's the best blocker.
Yep.
And being the best blocker also means he's the one most likely to be held back to block.
And also, you know, he's their best possession guy other than T.O. And if T.O. is playing at 50% or 60%, what does that mean?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why this game is so hard to predict. Because nobody knows, will T.O. play? If so, how good will he be? Is this going to be like the Super Bowl where he came back and was, you know, 90%? Or is it going to be 50%? Or is he not playing at all?
God, it's impossible to pick. It really is.
Yeah.
This is the toughest one.
I couldn't believe it because 2 weeks ago, it would have easily said that if these two teams played in the playoffs in Dallas, that the Cowboys would just destroy the Giants.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Seahawks-Packers. What do you think?
I think that I'm taking the ball and I'm going to score.
For both sides?
No, I mean, you know, you're going to hear that line 100 times on Saturday.
You snuck the Hasselbeck line by me. Yeah, you're right. I didn't even.
No, I like this game, too. I mean, I'm liking, you know, you wrote it, I think, last week, and I'm feeling kind of the same way. Given the way Dallas has played recently, I think Green Bay is really the best chance to go to the Super Bowl out of the NFC.
Yep.
But the Seahawks are a pretty good team here. You know, one of the things, of course, is that the Seahawks are really driven on defense by that front seven, really strong pass rush. But I think Green Bay allowed the fewest sacks of any offensive line this year. In our adjusted sack rate, that's, you know, sacks per pass play adjusted for opponent, Green Bay's offense is number one in not having Favre get sacked. Some of that is Favre throws the ball. You know, he's smart about throwing the ball away.
Right.
But that was a, you know, such a huge problem for Washington that's really not going to be as big a problem for Green Bay because they're good against good pass rushes.
And also the Washington guys dropped a lot of passes.
Well, I mean, Seattle guys drop a lot of passes too. It's not as bad as it used to be with Darryl Jackson out of town, but You know, their receivers aren't necessarily 100%. I was a little surprised that DJ Hackett had such a good game, but Deion Branch didn't play. They say this week that Branch is going to play, so who knows? And
but well, I mean,
that's another interesting dynamic, because the Packers are really bad against slot receivers, because their safeties, especially that guy Tari Bigby, is terrible in pass coverage.
Right.
And the nickelback's not really that good, that guy Dendy. And so they've given up some big games to slot receivers, and I don't think there's a team that goes three wide more often than the Seahawks in the NFC. I mean, the Patriots and Colts do it more often, but in the NFC, I think they go three wide more than any other team. So if they, you know, find that slot guy against Bigby, there could be some big gains there.
Well, my point was that the Seahawks defense did look good last week, but part of the reason it looked good is because, hey, I'm going to say four. The Redskins dropped four huge passes that would have kept drives alive or got, you know, been a big play or whatever. And I'm not sure the Packers dropped those passes.
Yeah, this was a little bit of argument between me and the readers on Football Outsiders in the past week. I think that the quality of the Seattle front seven leads to their secondary being a bit overrated. Mm-hmm. I don't think Trufant belongs in the Pro Bowl.
Really?
He's a nice guy. He's a good player. But I think that there were definitely better cornerbacks in the NFC this
year. Like who?
Roderick Hood from Arizona. Charles Woodson from Green Bay.
What about Asante?
What?
Asante?
Well, Asante's in the AFC. I'm talking NFC.
Oh, I thought you were talking whole league. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Asante is, I mean, I doubt there's anybody who would disagree with the idea that Asante Samuel is the second best cornerback in football at this point.
Or the idea that the Patriots will absolutely let him go and just draft a cornerback to replace him. $8 million.
We'll have to see. I do say that I have a jersey for that guy from Kansas in my shopping cart at NFL Shop, just waiting for me to hit the button after they draft him.
Right. Yeah, it's just, I'm not going to say Belichick's easy to predict at this point, but if they re-sign Samuel for $70 million or $80 million or whatever, you know, Nate Clements kind of money, it would just fly against everything they've done the last 7-8 years.
They do have to find money for Moss, too, and that's sort of the issue. And the fact is that that pick of the 49ers is very likely a cornerback if they let Samuel go, and Dante Stallworth has probably already called his real estate agent.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about the big free agent cornerbacks. I would really take a chance on Samuel or Nnamdi Asamoah long before I would Trufant, because Trufant has been somewhat successful in the last year or two, because they've moved to more of sort of a cover two type style in Seattle. And I always remember in man coverage the way Torrey Holt would just beat up on him every time they played St. Louis. And if I were, it's not going to be as bad as Jason David, but if I was a team that played a lot of man, I don't think I would want him.
Yeah, everybody for the Pats, they keep talking about linebackers, get a young linebacker. They don't draft linebackers. They like veteran linebackers. They like guys who are smart. They'd rather have somebody who's basically washed up, like Seau, who's smart as a whip, versus some young guy who doesn't know where to go.
Yep, and they take young corners. And that's the it's funny. If the thing about Samuel as a free agent, if Asamoah doesn't, you know, if he's not going to demand the same kind of contract, that could be kind of a steal, because he's really talented. The guy from the Raiders.
So you're leaning toward the Packers in this game.
Yeah, I'm definitely leaning towards the Packers. I wouldn't write off any of the visiting teams this week, but, I mean, I think the Packers look really good.
Really? You would not write off the Chargers?
No, because of the fact that Manning does historically have trouble with the 3-4. You know, Manning having trouble means he only has great games instead of spectacular games.
Yep.
But, you know, the Chargers have done things against them in the past, and it's unlikely that they'll have two punt return touchdowns this time.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have a situation where one team is one of the top five special teams in the league, and the other team has the next to last special teams in the league, that's a situation where you could have one or two random special teams plays decide the game. It doesn't usually work out that way, but it's more likely to work out that way when you have a huge difference in special teams. And the Colts' special teams are awful in every way except punt return.
Right.
And the Chargers' special teams are great in every single way.
That's interesting, because you would think like a North Turner team would not have good special teams.
I don't know why,
but you just think that.
Yeah, I guess it's because of the whole, you know, the whole thing about discipline. But then again, you would think Tom Coughlin teams would have great special teams and no penalties. And until this year, the Giants had terrible special teams and all kinds of penalties. So the discipline thing doesn't really, you know, doesn't actually work out in the numbers when teams get on the field that way.
Right. So what do you think, what are the numbers do you have for this Colts-Chargers game?
Well, the thing is that I was talking about the tight ends with Witten.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, the Colts are the second best team against tight ends. And so that makes me think that the Antonio Gates injury hurts LaDainian Tomlinson more than it hurts Rivers. Because if Gates were to play, I think they'd do a good job covering him. But it would take Sanders out of the box.
Yep.
Without Gates, they are free to stack Sanders in the box on every single first and second down, no matter what, and keep him straight on Tomlinson.
Hmm. And Tomlinson did not look good last week.
No, I mean, listen, you know, he's the blocking there has sort of gotten worse. I don't know what happened to Marcus McNeil this year. You know, Tomlinson's still really talented, but you do have to get the blocks to make it happen. And, you know, Sanders goes after everybody. The guy's amazingly talented. That's why he's Defensive Player of the Year. And if you don't have to use him in pass coverage against, you know, the greatest running back of the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, that's a pretty good thing that you get to put Sanders on LT instead.
What do your numbers say for the number of people who punch a wall when they realize that they took the Chargers and then they're down 10-0 and that they picked a team with Norv Turner and Phil Rivers and that team has to now come back against Peyton Manning and the Colts?
I think that instead of punching the wall, somebody should smack them aside across the face with a book and say, Antonio Gates was injured. What were you thinking?
Yeah. I don't see how anybody – first of all, I don't see how this line is 8. It should be 10. It should be at least 10. And second of all, I don't see how you make a case for the Chargers.
It's because of that stuff with the 3-4, I think, and the Chargers have, you know, they stopped the perfect season that the Colts had a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Another interesting guy to watch here is going to be Dallas Clark, because he didn't play the first time these guys played each other. And he's not really a tight end. He's really a slot receiver. And the Chargers are dismal against slot receivers. Drayton Florence lost his starting job, and he's the nickelback now. Their safeties are all terrible except for Eric Weddle, and Weddle's not a pass coverage guy. He's a hitter. So Clark could go nuts on them this week.
Hmm. All right. Let's go to our beloved Patriots hosting the Jags. The line started at 11 and moved all the way to 13.
Yeah, that's a little surprising because I really don't see the Jags as a team that's going to get blown out here. Because I think they're going to run enough to keep it's not like they're going to be giving the ball back to the Patriots constantly where the Patriots can just score and score and score. So, I mean, I think I said this last week. Jacksonville looks like a team of destiny that just picked the wrong year to be the team of destiny.
Hmm.
They should have picked a year where the Colts and Patriots were not this good.
Last year would have been good for them.
Yes. Or the year before. If they had done this the year before, they would be Pittsburgh. But, you know, listen, people will point at us and say Homer, but the fact is, when you have the best team in the history of the regular season, you kind of have to assume they're going to win every game in the playoffs until they don't.
Yep. I made that point with Cousin Sal, who was on just before you. Same thing. It's like people, it seems like they're talking themselves into reasons why the Pats could lose.
Yeah, people are so busy talking about Jacksonville as a northern team that can run the ball. That they don't think about, well, what if there's not that much wind? Does Jacksonville really have the secondary to keep up with Brady or Manning on a no-wind outdoor day or an indoor day? You know, God forbid they beat the Patriots. They go to Indianapolis after that.
Mm-hmm.
And Rasheen Mathis had a down year. You know, we do this kind of game charting thing and produce cornerback numbers, and he was way down from last year in those. And so I could see, you know, Moss just using the size and in the red zone and having a big day against Rasheen Mathis. And, you know, Sammy Knight he had a lot of tackles this year, but that's not necessarily because he's that great or that fast anymore. And the linebackers struggle in pass coverage, and Mike Peterson's not going to play. And, you know, you can talk all you want about how great their running game is, but they also have to play defense against the Patriots. The other interesting thing is they gave up a lot of yards up the middle on runs this year, which means, you know, Patriots could run up the middle on them, and some Maroney draws up the middle. As good as those defensive tackles are, Stroud's not around at this point, and they gave up a lot of yards up the middle, and the Patriots could definitely run on them.
You know what's funny about this game? If they call the hold on the left tackle on the 4th-and-2 Gerard draw, and it was a hold, we're talking about Pat's Pittsburgh right now.
Yeah, that was really interesting the way that I was surprised. Jacksonville 28-10, and then Gerard was awful in the second half.
Awful.
Except with his feet. He was terrible.
Awful.
And, as good as he was this year.
I really wonder about them if they – and you know, I don't know the exact date on this, but they haven't had to play from behind and win a game in about two and a half months.
Yeah, I remember you saying that last week.
Last week,
and the answer is that they have. It's against Indianapolis.
But they lost. Yeah. Yeah, we haven't seen, and I just, I don't see how anybody gets through the playoffs without having to come from behind once. We almost they almost had their moment in the Pittsburgh game because Pittsburgh jumped out to the 7-0 lead. Immediately they get the kickoff return to the 2-yard line and it's 7-7.
They did come back. I mean, they came back against Pittsburgh to score at the end and take the lead and win.
Right, but they further.
But after they had already given up a huge lead themselves.
Yeah, you know though I know they came back and they did the game-winning field goal, but I want to see this team when they're down 10, down 11, down 12, down 13, and they have to throw the ball and they can't do the mix and match. Because even that last drive, it was kind of ball control-y. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Patriots, it's a small sample size because it's not like they were in a lot of close games here. Mm. But they had the worst defense in the league in third quarter of close games, games that were within a touchdown. And the best defense in the league in the fourth quarter of close games.
Hmm.
All those games where players were just running on them willy-nilly in the first three quarters, those guys all got shut down in the fourth. McGahee shut down.
Yeah.
Adai shut down in the fourth quarter. So, I mean, you can't take anything away from Fred Taylor and Maurice Jones-Drew and the Jacksonville offensive line. But if that sucker's close, the Patriots have a small lead, and they're still trying to run because, you know, if you only have to score one touchdown, you don't necessarily have to do nothing but pass. The Patriots defense has shown that it can lock down in the fourth corner.
Yeah. Well, I would love to see a Colts-Patriots game. I just think that would be
miss. I get so sick of the hype, because when you run a website with comments,
yep.
The Colts-Patriots rivalry seriously makes normally intelligent people go completely bonkers. I mean,
yep.
Insane, say the dumbest thing, attack each other constantly in some dramatically irrational ways, and it's such a good rivalry, but at the same time, I think it really brings out the worst in the fans of both teams.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I love the rivalry, and I certainly wouldn't want my team to lose. But, you know, there's a part of me that's rooting for a San Diego win, not because I have anything against Indianapolis, but just because I don't want to have to go through another week of hype. Although if San Diego wins, we're going through another week of, well, we danced in the middle of the field, the Patriots, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. And
yeah.
Then we'll bring up, well, Phillip Rivers pointing at the Denver Broncos, and maybe the Chargers aren't such nice people after all. And, oh, my God, it's going to be – any of these are going to be awful. There's too much, like, personality weirdness going on in the AFC.
Well, don't you also think that because we live in an age now where people are just digesting sports constantly, that anything that has more than, like, you know, a sequel and then a sequel to the sequel, then people just get tired. Like, the Colts and Pats have played, I think, 4 playoff games in the past, what, 5 years?
Something like that.
Yeah, 4 in the last 6
Except
or whatever.
For 2005 was the 1 year they didn't.
Yeah, and I think people are just...
Yeah, much like the Red Sox and Yankees, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
I will say this about the Chargers. The Chargers have all kinds of fighting with the Patriots.
Yeah.
Suddenly they have all kinds of fighting with Denver.
Yeah.
And then they spent the whole week having verbal fighting with Tennessee. Maybe the problem is not that the Patriots, Broncos, and Titans are mean people.
Yeah.
Maybe the problem is that the Chargers can't get along with other teams.
Well, either way we win, because if the Chargers come to Foxborough.
Oh, yeah, that I would.
Oh,
yeah.
That would be great. And really one of the most enjoyable 3 hours I'm ever going to spend in my whole life.
But I seriously do think if that line is 13, I think Jacksonville covers. They're
all right.
A really, really good team.
So you think two favorites, Jacksonville, and you're ambivalent on the Giants-Cowboys.
I'm really ambivalent on the Giants-Cowboys at this point, and I can't believe I'm saying that. And I think the Patriots will win, but Jacksonville will cover.
All right, Aaron Schatz, we'll look for you on footballoutsiders.com, and you do some stuff for the Worldwide Leader as well.
Yeah, the stat notebook. We'll have the stat notebook that goes up on Thursday in the Sunday countdown section of the NFL section on ESPN.com. And, you know, I'm in most of the issues at ESPN, the magazine, at this point, too, so...
Cool. All right.
Yeah.
Good luck. Talk to you
girl.
Next week. All right. I'm going to call two of my buddies at work, and we're going to sneak attack them. And normally, I don't like to do this, but screw it. Let's see how it works. The first one, we're going to call my buddy Jeff, who is the co-creator of my playoff manifesto that I've put 4 versions of on ESPN.com. We're up to playoff manifesto 4.0. And actually, next year, I'm probably due for a 5.0. Let's call him at work. And see what he's thinking. And odds are he'll probably be thinking the same things that I'm thinking. But let's see.
Trady.
Hey, you're on the podcast.
Right now?
Yeah. I'm calling you out of the blue.
Can I do some Bill Walton?
No, you can't. I was going to call Chip to get his thoughts on the Packers, my buddy Chip. But I decided that there was no way he was going to answer if he knew I was calling. So I'm getting you're a Vikings fan. The Packers, you root for them because they're in the same division. You almost feel like it's another one of your sons advancing.
Well, I have to adjust to this because I want to first congratulate you on the podcast so that you've got your voice down about 4 octave levels. It's so good.
Thank you.
People who are listening don't know that Bill used to be a high falsetto, and this actually is better than Walton working on the stuttering. It's just
well, that. But you know what it is? It's still too high.
I think it's great.
Thank you.
All right, so
Packers -8, Seahawks. Really, the NFC. What are you, North now?
NFC North.
NFC North's best chance in about 10 years. Well, the Bears, I guess, last year, but then everybody knew they weren't going to win. Your best chance in about 10 years to win a Super Bowl.
I can't believe I have to talk as if I'm a long time Packer fan. But
you're a long time NFC North fan.
Yeah, that's true. It's good for the NFC North, which by default is good for the Vikings in some twisted way. No, I've been doubting this Packers team the entire time because we all remember what Favre was capable on, where you just throw it up and the ball gets intercepted. And now he's actually put it together. He's actually running an offense instead of just throwing it. And the running game seems to be for real.
Right. And do you think, if you had to bet your money on any of the NFC teams, which one would you go with?
Outside of the Vikes? You're down to the Packers or Dallas. You really are from what you've seen.
You're not selling the Giants.
No, not yet, because there's still, this goes back to the manifesto, is that you still have Eli Manning, I think, that is too shaky as a quarterback.
Well, that's the real reason I wanted to have you on. The Packers thing was just the guys, but we came up with this manifesto years and years ago, and I've done 4 editions of it on the website. I should have called you last week, but we ran out of time. And last week we were faced with this game that went against everything the manifesto ever told us, this Jags-Steelers game. And everything was pointing to don't take the Jags.
Right.
And you love the Jags, and we argued about it on the phone. And I ended up taking them, even though I knew it was something weird was going to happen. And as it turned out, the final line was Steelers +2.5, and they lost by 2.
They lost by 2.
Maybe one of the greatest moments in the manifesto's history.
It really was. And so it kind of proves that somehow you can still adapt. It's a living, breathing document, much like the Constitution.
When we were gambling in the mid-90s, there's a guy that I won't say his last name. We always called him by his last name. His first name was John, and we used to call it the John Pick. He would take these games every week that were so bizarre, such bizarre picks that we just couldn't figure out, and they would win.
Right, and he would do. He would do that little card, and yet, as you went on, you realized, you know, how amateurs gamble, and what they do is they look for the obvious pick, they take the road favorite, and you certainly never want to go the obvious way unless it's Pittsburgh Jacksonville.
Yeah, but last week I talked myself into it because the Jags did pass one test of the manifesto, which was that they were a hot team heading into the playoffs, which is something the manifesto likes. So you could have made the case for them on that, but everything else was pointing against them.
Right, and I even thought, even though they had some games where they were resting some starters, but even Tampa, when you look at their last 4, even when the game doesn't count, you don't want to back in. You just don't want to go into the playoffs soft. And the Packers, actually, conversely, if I remember, I mean, they, you know, outside of that Bears game, I mean, they actually were still playing good football all the way to the end.
And they even won in Week 17.
They did. Well, they did, and they really, you know, they didn't have to. So I think in this game, you know, I think when after finishing watching the Washington-Seattle, I was thinking that no line is too high enough, although I think we both get emotional after we've made wrong calls, and I was wrong at that one. But, but I just, looking at that Seattle team, their offense, I just don't trust them. I know that defensively they look good, but offensively I just don't know how they're going to compete with what the Packers are going to put up.
So we wavered on the manifesto a little bit because 2005 and 2006, so many weird things happened. You're feeling better about the manifesto heading into these 2008 playoffs round 2.
That's the thing. I think you need to know when to trust it and when not to. But I think this year, what was the, when did we, there was a year, was it the Baltimore year where it almost worked? Was it perfect? Was it flawless?
I think I went like 10-1 or something, and I remember the, unfortunately your Vikings were involved, but
right.
The Vikings-Giants game, everything in the manifesto pointed to the Giants. And even though you wanted the Vikings to win and it hurt, you knew that deep down you were screwed.
Right, right.
And then in the Super Bowl, the same thing with Baltimore over the Giants.
Yes. Trying to think if last year was the exception that proves the rule. And it really
it was Rex Grossman in a big game.
Oh, that's true.
The other thing was last year was a little weird because the NFC, there was really no dominant teams. I feel like we're back to what the NFL used to be. We had the four dominant teams. We have the teams that are good at home and not so good on the road. We have the teams that are going to get sunk by a bad coach or a bad quarterback. So for whatever reason, the world has been righted.
Right. And how long has it been to that point where you could just go, and like you wrote in an article, where you can bet New England and you can almost count on winning every week. Generally, you can bet Green Bay, you can bet Dallas, and you usually get the performance. So
right.
we might be back to the dominant era.
That would be nice.
What about the X factor in this game?
Yep.
Which is the demise of Seattle's running back.
Sean Alexander.
It's like night and day.
Yeah.
There's no there anymore.
Right. I don't see the Seattle thing at all. I really don't. I thought Hasselbeck was crummy.
And it opened up at 8. Is it still 8 or are we drifting
it's
up?
It's still 8. People seem to like the Seahawks defense, and you know the public still doesn't totally trust Favre because he's burned them so many times.
He has. And I do have a soft spot for Seattle because as we go back, and it's kind of funny you're calling me on the podcast since having children, I've been out of the football scene for about 10 years, just trying to hang on. Do you remember when Seattle played there? Who was the cornerback they had with the black dreadlocks?
The dreadlocks? Well, they had
two
of them.
And I thought it was the same guy, and I thought he was all over the field.
That's right. It was Al Harris and Mike McKenzie, and you thought this guy was having the greatest game
that
he's ever had.
But what was great about that game is, and you have to like Hasselbeck, remember it went into OT.
Yeah.
They have the coin toss. And he says, we'll take the ball, and we're going to score.
Right.
And I loved him for that.
Well, they've been playing that clip a lot this week.
I would just say it right now. We want the ball, and we're going to score. Okay? Is that okay? I said it. I mean it. Thank you. All right.
Yeah, I mean, I just you have to like Hasselbeck. But the problem is this is really just Hasselbeck.
The funniest thing was after that game, even though the Seahawks, and I think we had both taken the Seahawks and ended up not covering. Or maybe, I don't remember how it turned out.
I think we covered.
Maybe we had the Seahawks money line, or I forget how it worked out. And we were supposed to be upset at Hasselbeck, but you were so fired up that he did that at the coin flip that you didn't care.
I know. There's something about it that was so good. I mean, it was brash. It's as good as it gets. And if you take still the top quarterbacks in the league, I mean, he's certainly there now.
Do you look down on him a little bit that he's Elizabeth Hasselbeck's brother-in-law or no?
Well, actually, it's a plus for you. You were down on him forever, but didn't you when he first came in? You didn't think he could play, did you?
You can't listen to me with anybody from BC.
I know.
I'm just going to be biased against any BC product, except for Jared Dudley, who I like. Who's
who you do like?
And the Bobcats, I mean. Anyway.
No, I think he's all right, and I'm always going to root for a guy who's balding. I mean, it's in my wheelhouse.
You went 4-0 last week.
I did.
Didn't you go 4-0 in our?
No, I had the Washington.
Oh, yeah, you had the Redskins loss. So you went 3-1. And you're still alive in our picks league. You're still alive in our picks league. What are your picks this week?
All right. What are the chances that my opponent's listening?
Zero.
Zero. Okay.
Well, don't you have home field advantage?
I might. So it doesn't matter. So if he duplicates me, he'll lose. All right. So in this case, we open up. We like Green Bay.
Okay.
Next up. We have our who's our AFC matchup?
Colts Chargers.
I really like the Colts here. No one's talking about them.
I like it too. You know, the sad thing is we basically always like the same games.
Yes. Yeah. There's not much difference, and we always lose the same games too.
Yeah.
The Colts are rested. San Diego.
Yeah.
We all know that this.
Not even worth talking about.
Right. We're just going to say North. NORV, and that's all you need to know. We move on to Sunday.
Pats Chargers. Oh, no, Pats Chargers Saturday. Pats Jags is Saturday night. But.
How can you not love the Pats here?
What's the scenario that they don't
just run it up? Philip Rivers against the blitz.
David Garrett. You just screwed up the quarterbacks. Pats Jags.
Excuse me.
Yeah. David Garrett.
Let me just throw him. David Garrard against the blitz.
No, I didn't. Work, so you're allowed to screw up.
Yeah. I like that. And then the toughest game of the week. What's scary is they got a lot of favorites here. The toughest game is the Giants Cowboys. We usually think that one dog will show up, and that's where I'm leaning there.
This leads to my final question, and a pivotal reason why I wanted to have you on. Everybody agrees that the three favorites are going to cover, and the Giants will be the underdog that covers, and that seems to be the consensus across the country.
Oh, then I'm not adding any value here.
No, you're confirming I think it's valuable to confirm that these are the trends.
Yeah, but you really, on one hand, you don't really want to be in the trend, you know, bandwagon, but I don't see it falling any other way.
I think
do you think of a four favorite sweep? What do you think the odds of that are? Is that possible?
I was honestly thinking about taking the four favorites and trying to go 3-1.
Just doing that.
Yeah,
and you figure somewhere along the way you'll have the upset. I think the most dangerous thing though too is you know why they call them teasers, and you have a lot of the games that look like they set up well for that. And you know, it's true, somewhere along the way something strange will happen and probably blow some people out.
Yeah, and that's something we added to the manifesto. The same day tease. There's two games, and it looks like you could just easily throw the two favorites in a tease. You don't want to do that.
And right, and no one knows how it happens. You just can't foresee these things. But I don't know, maybe this week it all comes together.
That's the one thing we've learned in 15 years of gambling is there are forces that are higher than whatever we're thinking and whatever the players are doing. Things happen, and it's haphazard, and it doesn't make sense. But it just happens.
Yeah, also known as the gambling gods. You don't want to anger the gambling gods. It certainly is a higher power.
You don't. All right. The co-creator of the Gambling Manifesto, my buddy Jeff, thanks for coming on. Sorry we bothered you at work.
Thanks, Bill. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later. All right. The Patriots are playing this weekend, coming off the 16-0 regular season. Chance to make history these last three games. I wanted to call my buddy J-Bug, who's been a season ticket holder since 1995, and get his thoughts on not only the game, but the mood in Boston, and whether or not the Patriots fans in this home crowd is making enough of an impact at these games. So let's give him a ring. Hey, Bug.
What's going on, man?
You're on the podcast. I'm sneak attacking you at work.
Oh, dude, come on.
No, we're doing it. You just said dude for a national audience. I'm doing my football podcast, and I wanted to get the feel in the New England area, and since you live in the great state of Massachusetts, I thought you could help us out.
Well, the feel for me is spanking. it's a no-brainer. It's easy money.
Easy money even at minus 13.
Easy money at minus 13. Don't you see 28-3 or 35-10?
I would love that. Nothing would make me happier.
I mean, would it surprise you if it was 17-13? I'd be floored.
You know, I do worry about. I was thinking about the game we played against them in '96. I know it's, you know, nobody's left on either team, but that game and the game we played against Tennessee, that was freezing cold when Vinatieri made the field goal. It was like kicking a block of concrete. But I do wonder if it's going to be one of those ugly games that would
be
just enough to win.
46 degrees.
No, I'm just saying, I wonder if it's going to be one of those ugly games at home where the crowd's not really into it.
No,
that's my fear.
No.
I'm with you. I'm taking the Pats. I'm just, that would be my fear.
Possibly the Indy game.
Would play out that way.
Yeah, that one's a little bit scary for me.
So you're not afraid of David Garrett?
Not one bit. I mean, we're on a podcast right now, so I really can't get into it, but
yeah.
not one bit.
Okay.
No, not
so what time is the game this weekend?
The game's at 8 o'clock, Bill.
8 o'clock, East Coast time. You show up. You have your tailgating crew. What time do you get there?
Well, here's what they've been doing. We get there and we wait in line. We've been pulling off into like this little Red Roof Inn area because we get there too early and New England doesn't let anyone in the stadium.
Until when?
So 4 hours before game time.
Oh.
So we'll be waiting in line there and they'll make us wait and wait and wait on Route 1. And we'll get there, you know, right at 4 o'clock. Right when they let us in, we're there.
Now, why would they do that? Why wouldn't they let you just be there all day?
I don't know. I don't know.
It's a bad job by the crafts.
I think they're family. It's definitely a different crowd than it was 10 years ago even. I think they're just afraid of rowdiness and craziness.
Are you saying different, like more white collar or more,
much more
rowdier?
Well, you know, you still have the guys, the plumbers and electricians that are willing to pay $100 a ticket.
Mm.
But they have – the stadium's just awful. It's awful. I mean, it's the most beautiful stadium. It's great. The crowd is awful. It's
well,
bad. You can yell and it's terrible.
Well, talk about how the fans that are in the top section – wow, in the old days, those were fans that could make noise. Yeah,
they can't be heard. They're too far away. They can't be heard.
So it's become a thing of the haves and the have-nots. The haves are down in the lower bowl.
Yes. They even taunt you, actually. The haves taunt you as they drive by because they have their own access road.
Really?
The haves have a little special way in and out of the stadium so that you don't have to wait for 2.5 hours on Route 1 to get home. You know, getting back to Jacksonville, now you referenced 96, and I think it was 96... Was it 96 that we played Jacksonville?
Yeah, it was January 97. I was dating the great one at
the
time.
You're absolutely right. I think they beat Denver, didn't they?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, I was at that
game. We watched that game together. We watched Jacksonville-Denver. Remember that? We're rooting for Jacksonville.
Yes.
It was a great moment.
Yes, we did. And I was actually at because we had the away and home.
Mm-hmm.
So the AFC Championship game was at home that year.
Yes.
That's right. Now, why don't you go back to 2005, 2006, Willie McGinnis, who, you know, his last day in a Patriots uniform.
4.5 sacks.
28-3. Don't you see that happening again? Isn't that more likely?
I hope so. Let's talk about Willie for a second.
Willie.
Your favorite Patriot.
Yeah.
Your favorite Patriot ever?
Oh, I don't know.
He's up there. He's in your pantheon.
He's up there, yeah.
You had his jersey. You wore his jersey. You've been a season ticket holder since 94.
'95 was when we got the season ticket. We went to every game since '94. I think '95 is when we got the package.
So you had the Willie jersey. Willie goes to the Browns.
The problem is, Bill, you didn't have to have season tickets before 1994.
Right.
So we just went to all the games.
Right.
So
Willie, you buy his jersey, goes to the Browns. You still wear the Willie jersey?
I do.
Explain to us why you have not bought another jersey.
Why would I? Why, if you're wearing a Hog Hannah jersey, why would you buy another jersey? You're gonna
see Hannah. I think I wrote about this, about how you're almost better off having the jersey of a guy that's not on the team anymore over rolling the dice with Adalius Thomas or somebody, and then 2 years later he's a salary cap casualty and you're stuck with this $200 jersey.
This is accurate information. I remember getting teased and taunted on the airwaves because of that column that you wrote.
Teased and by who?
Callahan, Dennis and Callahan, the local WEEI guys, I think actually read it a la Larry King, your column. And then,
oh, about jerseys. I remember that.
And
the Aryan Monolith, they went after me.
Yes, they did. They really did. They went after me, too, saying, you know, who's this J-Bug with the Jerry Callahan voice. So.
I actually like those guys, but they will go after me from time to time.
Well, they should, right? I mean, otherwise they'd be spineless. Why wouldn't they? You go after people from time to time.
They interviewed Doc Rivers every week, and now that the Celtics are good again, I guess they had him on 2 weeks ago, and they did the whole thing about how I owe him an apology. Why do I have to apologize to Doc Rivers because he was a terrible coach for 3 years, and now he's a good coach?
Well, I mean,
we all thought he was a bad coach. It's not like I was wrong. The team lost 18 in a row last year.
Well, here's the question. Would you owe him an apology if they didn't have Garnett on this team?
No.
No, you'd owe him a ticket out of town.
Yeah.
I honestly,
I think Doc has done a solid job this year, but, I think Denzel Washington could be coaching this team and would be 25-7.
Possibly. Well, Garnett
is basically like having a player coach.
I've gone to a lot of the games this year, and I'm not like your dad, but I've gone to a lot of the games, and the guy is just charismatic, and he rises. He's the reason why the crowd is good again. If they were, you know, let's say they were 25-7 or somewhere around there, I don't think the crowd, without Kevin Garnett, the crowd wouldn't be the same. The guy just oozes energy. It's great to watch him play.
Never takes a night off.
Never.
Hardest working man in show business, like the Bruce Springsteen of the NBA almost.
Almost. I'm afraid he's going to have an aneurysm. He really is just, the guy's insane, in a good way.
All right, last question. Sure, so the Red Sox win the World Series.
Yes.
The Patriots are the heavy favorite to win the Super Bowl, and now the Pats are 29-3. The Boston has a chance here for a historic, almost like the Grand Slam in tennis or golf. It would be not the Grand Slam because it's only three and nobody cares about hockey. The Grand Three Slam or whatever you want to call it. What is the mood like in the Boston area right now in this unexpected renaissance of just greatness and glory?
We're a little bit cocky and arrogant.
Uh-oh.
We're a little bit. You know from the Pats games, it's ho-hum. I think
right.
the playoffs are always a little bit different. Now, I sent you an email back in early October.
Mm-hmm.
If you look up the numbers for Boston sports teams, of course, not including the Bruins.
Yep.
I think we're somewhere in the 45-3. That is the three teams' record.
Right, since mid-October?
Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah, it's like 49-3 or something.
That's insane.
Yeah,
it's insane. It's nuts. Now, my buddy Murph and I were just having a conversation today. When the Sox won the World Series, it was I shut off the TV and went to bed.
Right.
It was just, when the Pats win the Super Bowl, that's not what I'll be doing.
Right. And we had a chance to share the Pats' first Super Bowl win, which I wrote about, which happened in New Orleans, which will probably never be topped ever. But it is funny to think, like, back then versus now, and you look at the crowds that the Pats, I don't want to say they're bad crowds, but I don't think we have the home field advantage of a lot of other teams.
No.
Although I am going to let me ask you this, though. The whole thing of the state-of-the-art NFL stadium, it doesn't seem like it works for anybody.
No, definitely not in New England.
Because the first section is all the rich people.
Yep.
And then you have the suites right behind them. And then you have like the club seats right above that. And then by the time you get to the fans who show up 5 hours before the game, they're a million miles away.
Well, what it has helped is my hemorrhoids because there's no longer the aluminum seats. But that's about it.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
But deep down, you miss the aluminum seats.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt, because you slam on them, you smash them. I've got a beer cup holder now.
A beer cup holder, man.
At Gillette. I mean, in Foxborough, you get a beer cup holder.
Well, you miss the old stadium.
I do. I really do.
Some great memories there.
Some incredible memories. Great memories. I mean, again, we're on the podcast, but I can't tell the great stories that go there.
Right.
But there's a bunch of them.
And the best game you saw there was the snow game?
I would say, you know what? Before the snow game, it was the Steelers. It was the AFC Championship game against the Steelers. That was fantastic. When Bledsoe led to Terry Glenn with the long bomb, that was just. It was the Fog Bowl.
Which one was that?
That was 96. Was it 96?
No, that. We're getting old. We're screwing up our dates.
No, it was. It was Bledsoe to Terry Glenn. It was against the Steelers, and it was before the.
Oh, we were a three seed.
That's right. We were a three seed. And it was before the Jacksonville game.
Right. Oh, we were a two seed. What were we?
No, I think we were the three seed.
Didn't we go home away home?
Yeah, what happened was when Jacksonville lost to Denver, that assured us of the AFC Championship game. No, I don't think we went home away home.
I think we just went home.
I think we did too.
You know what? That was a I don't remember a lot of the mid-90s is my problem.
Neither do I, but I do remember that. And I know the game, it started off, we shut down the bus. He was awful.
Yeah.
All we had to listen to all week long was the bus. And we shut him down. I don't want to insult any of your Pittsburgh following.
Oh, no. Please insult the Pittsburgh following. I implore you to do so.
Yeah, we shut him down.
Always own the bus. The Patriots have always owned the bus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we have. He never did anything against us. And then, Bledsoe to Glenn in the fog. It came out of nowhere. It was just he was streaking down the sideline. I think it was Woodson, actually. He toasted Woodson down the sideline. It was about a 45, 50-yard pass in the air. You couldn't see the ball. And then out of the fog comes the ball into Kerry Glenn's hands, and the place went nuts, and that was that.
I'm going to give you an underrated game in the old stadium. Monday night, Miami. We're down 23-19. I think Bledsoe had a broken index finger or something. It's like about 98. It's right around the time we were all realizing that Pete Carroll was just a horrendous NFL coach. And
Willie McGinnis returned a touchdown 55 yards that game, I believe, if that's the same game.
So Bledsoe's driving down. Carol is calling for the last time out. Bledsoe looks at him, ignores him, and just continues to do the drive, and then ends up flinging it into the end zone to somebody I can't remember for the game winner. And it was like, and that was when we thought, all right, here comes Drew. He's making the leap.
Yeah.
He's Larry Bird. He's Roger Clemens. Like, we thought he was moving to that level, and that was really his highlight.
Well, that was, I think, you know, the highlight for Bledsoe was the Minnesota game when we were.
Oh, in his rookie year, yeah,
that was fantastic. And you know what I miss? I miss being a sports fan from that crappy team where you're not making the playoffs. Like this is what, you know, these up and coming teams are feeling right now, which we already have. It was 94 as his rookie year, and we started out 0-11. And we were 4-11 going into the last game.
Remember, we lost the fourth in one game.
And then, there was other
in Pittsburgh, I think.
There's other sad sack stories. I mean, it was there was one game we were 5.5 point dogs, and it was 7-0, and he snapped it out of the end zone for the 7-2. It was murder. It was freaking murder. So anyway, we're 4-11, and it's the Miami game, and it's Bledsoe's rookie year, and Miami needs a win in New England to go to the playoffs.
Right.
And he hits Timpson. Remember Michael Timpson?
Of course.
Hits him in the end zone for the winning touchdown in Miami.
It was 26-20.
I believe it was. I think you're absolutely. And Miami, well, that was the Minnesota was 26-22. Was that Miami game 26-20 as well?
No, the Miami was 26-23.
Yeah, and it was freaking just greatness.
Well, I remember the thing I remember about that Minnesota game in his rookie year was that after he completed it, he didn't celebrate. He kind of turned around and looked at the bench. But he didn't raise his hands or anything. Like, he was kind of cool about it. And that's when I started thinking, oh, and I think we all did. We're like, oh, we might have something with this guy beyond what we thought.
Maybe he's not Frankenstein.
And then I think, you know, that was his put him on the map moment. And then, in 98, when he had that back to back, cause we won that game. And then remember we won that game with the Jets where they didn't line up for the 2-point conversion and the kicker ran it in.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah. Yep. Yep, 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 yep.
And
yep,
after
yep.
that, I think people thought, all right, Bledsoe's made the leap. And that really turned out to be the highlight of, or the pinnacle that he reached with the Patriots. You know, though.
It all comes to Parcells, too. I mean, he's the guy that changed the. Kraft, of course. I mean, just, you couldn't ask for better owners than the Kraft family.
But Parcells, they screwed the Parcells thing
up. Yeah, he played such a big role.
Yeah.
Such a big role.
I do think, though, that Drew, you know, because the Brady Bledsoe thing was so divisive, that. People forget, including myself, I will include myself in this group, people forget how important it was when we drafted him and how bad we were in the 6 years before he came along and gave us a credibility that we just didn't have along with Parcells.
Well, there's been a waiting list ever since.
Yeah.
I mean, that pretty much sums it up. There's been
and we thought we were, you know, we thought the team was moving the year before.
Oh, yeah.
Almost seemed like locked in going to St. Louis.
They were going to St. Louis. It was the Gillette, the Norelco guy, Victor Kiam. Was before
yeah,
that.
No, he sent it to who? Orthwine?
Yeah, Orthwine.
Well, Orthwine owned it.
Yeah, right. And Victor Kiam was the guy that was going to screw us over. If you remember, that was from 92, I think. And then Kraft came in, saved the day, and the rest is history. You know, 8 Super Bowls later, 10 years from now.
Right. And even up to 2000, after we went 5-11 with Belichick, I don't think, you know, neither of us would have imagined.
Dicey times. Well, you know, we're just happy that we got Tom Brady here. Here's a name for you, Kevin Turner.
Kevin Turner, he caught the Minnesota one. Yeah,
you're right. He did. He caught the
you're
pass.
Right. Yeah.
Gash, we've had some good fullbacks too. Oh man, yeah.
We had Ben Coates. Ben Coates also in his own quiet way put us on the map a little bit.
Yeah, he did. He did because that was a guy that, you know, it took three the first two guys couldn't bring him down.
Right.
Couldn't bring him down.
He had that remember the catch when I think it was like 4th and 7, and it was right near the end of the game, and Bledsoe, it was 4th and goal from the 7. Bledsoe threw it to him at the 1. He got pushed back by 2 guys, kind of whirled around, and just dragged the 2 guys into the end zone for the
touchdown. Oh, yeah, it probably took 2 years off of his career.
Yeah, it did.
He was the master as well. When you got down there, he was the master of the corner, and Bledsoe just went to him in the corner every time. And it just seemed to work. It's like Vrabel. Only it was Coates in the corner. It just seemed to work every time.
And we said that, we said that even as we were watching the Coates era, which was, this guy is not going to last.
No.
Every time it takes 3 guys to bring him down, this is not going to last very long.
I think it's the first time I ever saw someone branded. That was the scariest thing about him. He had that big brand on his arm.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Oh,
now
yeah.
That would be, like, commonplace.
It's common, but then it was like, oh, my God, this guy's an animal.
This guy is branded.
Sometimes I dare myself. I do like dry ice just to see what it would feel like. You know, like, no, man, no, 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 no. Why would you brand yourself?
Yeah.
Whatever, to each his own.
He's a madman. He was great. All right, J-Bug.
Hey, that's good stuff, Bill. And that was quite a little surprise. Hey, next time give me a little prep so I might know what I'm talking about.
No, this was better. This was better. Say hi to all your boys. We look forward to seeing you in the Red Roof Inn parking lot at 3:15 on Saturday.
Hey, I'll drink an extra one for you. And as always, I'll give you a call before the game and give you the weather conditions. Not
yes.
that you would ever
valuable.
Do such things that you shouldn't be doing, but...
One last thing.
Yeah.
You tailgate.
Yes.
One of your friends, Nico.
Nico, yes.
The master of the tailgate.
Yes.
The connoisseur.
The connoisseur of
tailgate. The Emerald Lagrassi.
He's
Is that what's
amazing.
His name? Emerald Lagrassi? The Emerald. We'll just call him the Emerald.
My brother Michael, who's 5'8 and weighs 300 pounds, knows him, all of them, but myself, I do not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he prepares just a feast.
Yes. Yes. Yes, he does.
Do you enjoy the tailgates or the games more?
The tailgates.
Yeah.
Yeah, the tailgates where it's happening, man. It's what it's all about. You go to the tailgate, you hang out with your buddies, you smoke a stogie, you drink a lot of brew.
Yeah.
You make terrible jokes.
Yeah.
You do safety wipes before you go into the stadium, and then you're on your way. And that's pretty much what it's all about, right?
Well, I look forward to your weather phone call on Saturday.
All right, Billy.
All right, Buck. Thanks.
Later, man.
Bye. Take care.
Target the sun off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.